and they are filled with incredible details. It's like wandering around the a very rich archaeological dig and picking up shards and old bottles. And this is what they wore in 1221, and this is what they ate and drank, and this was what their funeral customs were and their wedding customs. And even more than, I was thinking of Margaret Drabble's latest novel, The Realms of Gold, which fits all this description. And I read it with a sense of increasing discomfort, and finally I got enraged because she has taken the most superficial analysis of feminism and pulled off or ripped off a novel that has a woman who does not ever fail. Which is not possible. She succeeds as a mother, as a wife, as a lover, as an archaeologist, as a teacher, as everything. And it's a justification, I think, for continued heterosexuality, many of those books are. And, of course, I don't approve of that.
What would be your idea of an ideal culture? You want to talk in terms of utopia?
Utopia. Oh, well, some of my best friends are men, but
mean that, or is that?
Well, I have acquaintances that I get along very well with. I have an analysis of that too, but an ideal culture. I can hardly answer that question. I want to say, for instance, it's an all-female culture. The nearest I could come to it would be urging people to read that section in Joanna Russ's The Female Man on the planet or the time-space area called Whileaways, in which she very carefully writes about a female world and a female culture, how the children are raised, how romantic love is ironed out, how coupling and uncoupling, monogamy, non-monogamy, work, careers. She's done it. You know, if I could live on Whileaways, I'd be very happy.
What do you feel about, for example, Monique Wittig's book, Les Guerrières? How do you view that in terms of ideal culture?
Your mama won't like me. like me. Whoa, your mama won't like me. No, your mama won't like me. Whoa, your mama won't like me. Hey, your mama won't like me. Oh, your mama won't like me.
Susie Quatro with Your Mama Won't Like Me. Little break in the tape interview of Bertha Harris. We'll be going back to that in a minute after two announcements. The Penn Women's Center is having an introduction to feminism, and the title of the lecture will be Disowning the Patriarchy, Building a Women's World. It examines separatism as an alternative in sexist society. This will be held tomorrow at 4 p.m., in 112 Logan Hall, which is at 36th and Locust Walk, only it's down closer to Walnut, not Walnut Spruce. And on Wednesday, December 8th, at the Blackwell Health Center at 112 South 16th Street at 6:15 p.m., there will be a self-help demonstration. This will be a demonstration of an instruction in breast and vaginal self-examination. Again, that's at the Blackwell Health Center on Wednesday, and a $2 to $5 donation is requested. We're going back now to the interview with Bertha Harris.
Yeah, pardon my French, is I would describe as a transitory culture, and I think that's what she meant to write, although I'm not sure. Women as warriors, women perhaps post-Holocaust women who are pulling it all together and having to live, not necessarily by choice, but having to live as fighters to save their lives and save their world. And perhaps it isn't even as reality-paced as post-Holocaust. Perhaps it's a fantasy of what we have to look forward to. And the simultaneity that she uses is, I think, a good justification of my point, that while these women are having to live as fighters, they are also inventing the world with their songs, with their rituals, with their, they're making their culture while they're having to fight.
Do you feel that it's possible for lesbians to live without men completely?
Well, certainly not now. I mean, I rely on men to give me a paycheck at the university. I mean, if that's what you mean. To run the subway train and that sort of thing.
There are people who believe that lesbian separatism is an answer, that it completely obviates the need for men in your life. Do you feel that that's real, or that's just something that people use as an excuse?
Well, I think it's more of an example of how Americans think than anything else. Lesbian separatism is, I think, something, it's not an either-or situation. I think this is how we tend to think. We've been trained to think. You're either this or that, you got to do this or that. It wipes out choices, and it wipes out potentials, and it wipes out discovery. I think, though, that lesbian separatism, therefore, is something that you can go in and out of. That it shouldn't be set up as a sort of monolithic, eternal state of things.
This is it, you have to stay in it, or
yeah,
you can never come back again.
Right. Because it's also, in the world we live in, unless, of course, well, not even unless, of course, in the world we live in, it's not possible. I can wake up in the morning and be so enraged or be so possessed by a particular idea that I go to work feeling and thinking like a lesbian separatist. But again, when I have to look at the fact that I teach in an institution owned and run by men. My money that I support myself comes from those men. The ferry boat I take to Staten Island is run by men, the subway train, the food I buy, the food I eat, etc. I don't think it's solved by saying I'm going to go off on a mountaintop and or in the country and live with other lesbians, because again you have to rely somewhat.
Well, does that mean that that you believe in working within the system that'll catch all?
Well, I don't know whether I believe it in or not. I have to.
Do you think it's possible to work within the system towards, I guess, towards a realization of lesbian worth is probably the best way of saying it, because I don't think we've hit that yet.
It's possible. I think if your politics are good and you know who you are and what you're about, you can work within the system up to a certain point. I could pick out very dramatic instances of what that point is. For instance, working within the system, for instance, would be going before a grand jury and squealing on some lesbian, you know, who's done such and such. You know, that's a dramatic point. But I think most lesbians who are probably, as a group, the most economically underprivileged of all, because we are always being threatened with loss of our jobs and our livelihood or being cut off, that it's not a question of whether we want to or not, it's simply that we have to, but that we try to choose work that is as potentially useful to and helpful to as many women as possible.
Where do you feel that children fit into lesbian culture? And where do they fit into an educational perspective of lesbian culture?
Children. Well, I have a daughter who's 13 years old, who is the happy result of my one single brief heterosexual episode. And I don't. It's been reasonably easy for me, aside from the things that all single mothers go through, you know, like money and time and work and whatever. But I think lesbians I know who have sons or are trying to raise sons, again, if they're politically conscious, have a hell of a time.
Well, the culture certainly, as it stands now, is not set up for women who have sons. I mean, I think you're supposed to expose them at an early age. It's the best way to deal with them.
Yeah, which is an impossible thing to ask women to do, right? Really. I think it's impossible to be a mother in this culture. Forget lesbian culture. Things are made so difficult.
Adrienne Rich really goes into that in her book, which is...
Yeah.
Excellent, as far as the idea of the institution of motherhood and what society has made that into.
Mm-hmm.
How does your daughter deal with your being a lesbian, or doesn't she?
As soon as she could understand what I was talking about, I talked to her about it, and I think. Well, since birth, she has lived in a lesbian home, so it would be hard to talk about how she deals with it or doesn't deal with it or whatever. To her, it's natural. I don't know. She's had some trouble outside, especially as I became more and more public and whatever, but her responses to that trouble has been to fight back. And I think it's done nothing but good for her. It's made her tough and it's made her strong and she knows how to take care of herself. And she has one crucial advantage I didn't have growing up, and that's that she knows how to take care of herself. And she knows what the realities of heterosexuality are in terms of a lesbian home, rather than the reverse of that.
So nothing's an unknown to her, really.
No.
She's seeing things from all perspectives.
Yeah.
How do you feel in your job and as a writer being an out lesbian?
Well, I could get very anecdotal about that. I came out when I was interviewing for my job at the City University of New York to be director of women's studies program at Richmond College on Staten Island, and I simply decided that I could not live that. I couldn't live closeted on the job, even to a small extent anymore, because it was getting in the way with my thinking. It was getting in the way with my teaching and the whole shebang. And I had interesting reactions to it. Fear and trembling from many women who I noticed sometimes walked out of the bathroom as I walked in, even though they hadn't used it yet. Shades of Edward the Dyke.
Right, exactly.
The reactions of some of the men. One in particular I recall coming into my office every single day with no business, nothing really, no excuse, and telling me stories about lesbians.
Shades of the Children's Hour.
Right. And my favorite story about him is I watched the blue movie flicker through his brain. He finally said, you know, it's really funny. You know, every time my wife and I go to a party, there's always some lesbian there trying to pick her up. And I did a double take, and I said, well, Tom, the only thing I can say is that this is, I hate to bring this up, and I hate to say it, because it's probably going to make a considerable difference in your marriage, but it's common knowledge that lesbians only are attracted to other lesbians. And he went away, and I never saw him again. And that stopped that.
Oh, that's marvelous. That really is. That is a marvelous answer.
It's, I offer it for anyone's use, but other things that have happened. One thing that's been very strange is that everybody thought I was going to get fired, and especially the closet dykes there. And it was just the reverse. Coming out gave me, had marvelous psychologically strengthening resonances in my life. I was able to work more. I felt freer. I've probably accomplished more than most of the women there with all their household help and etc. and their money. And so that, in a way, very literal way, keeps me working. I mean, they can't really fire you if you've published more than everybody else. But the other effects were that, in an odd way, I had a leg up on a lot of the women, the straight women in the school, because the men, for all the wrong reasons, respected me instead of them. Since I wasn't a sexual possibility, then they would talk to me like one of the boys. Now that is screwed up from beginning to end, but still, it was to my, it always has been to my advantage.
It seems to me that once you come out, there's nothing that people can hold against you. I think one of the biggest fears for any gay person is my parents are going to find out. Mm-hmm. You know, and after your parents know, it, I don't think it really matters who else knows. And it seems to me that in any kind of job situation, if they know ahead of time, what can they can't hold it over you. I mean, they can't say, you know, we didn't know this.
I think the only time it they can sort of get at you is, unless you're at the top of the power heap, they can get you in secret votes and secret meetings. Because the university situation, which is what I know best, very, very few women have positions of power, not to mention lesbians. And the boys get together at the top administrative levels, and although they will not, they're too hip to admit why they're firing you. Mm-hmm. They get you on a technicality, and they have a vote, and bang, you're out the door.
Do you have-
Thank you.
To Jaden Sarsaparilla, Gonna Take a Miracle. Before this, you'd been listening to a taped interview with Bertha Harris, lesbian author, teacher, and just very interesting woman. I also taped the lecture that Bertha gave down at GCC, and that will be played at a later date on Amazon Country. Next week, Sharon Ray and Rose Weber will be doing the show, so tune in. T. Grace Atkinson said, "Feminism is the theory, lesbianism is the practice. Practice makes perfect. Have a good week." I'm Victoria Brownworth.